Welcome back, everyone, to the X-Cast. As ever, the truth is in here. I'm your host today, Carl Sweeney, and thank you for joining us for this, which is our discussion about the 11th episode of the third season, Revelations. And joining me today is a man returning to the podcast, Wayne Talbot. Hi there.
How's it going?
Yeah, really good to talk to you. It's the first time we've spoken, but people will have heard you know, in the past, of course. So, yeah, how you been getting on?
Really good. Really, really good. Very busy. But, yeah, good. Glad to actually get... I haven't been on the show, the X-Cast, in a while. I think it was kind of the start of last season, I think it was. Yeah. Season 2. But, no, it is. It's always fun to talk about the X-Files. I don't get to do it enough.
And we had all, you know, the activity around season 11, of course. I mean, did you watch the new season? What did you make of it, if you did?
I actually haven't. I'm not up to date with it. I haven't had time. I've been that busy with other things. I have them. I have the episodes. There's DVR'd. I have them saved. I just haven't had a chance to sit down. I'm terrible in that regards because I have about three or four different shows that I have to catch up on. And X-Files is one of them. I did watch, obviously, I watched season 10.
Yeah.
But season 11 has been put to one side, along with Twin Peaks. I haven't watched the new season of Twin Peaks either, and I'm waiting to watch all of that when I have it at the minute. Myself and my wife, we had a baby girl. She's actually 6 months now, and they're kind of getting into the parenthood and all that type of stuff, so kind of some stuff has gone on the back burner. That was one of those things.
I mean, I know all about that. It takes kind of twice as long to watch half as much TV, doesn't it, when kids come
out? It really does. But we have no problem watching, like, we've no problem mainlining all seven seasons of Bake Off on Netflix if we have to, you know, just to keep the baby, you know, quiet at night. But I can't watch episodes of The X-Files because I want to pay attention to them, like, you know.
Well, whenever you get round to it, I think you're in for a treat because I thought 11 was a big step up from 10.
I've heard that, yeah. I've heard it. I've heard nothing but good things compared to 10. I gave 10 a bit of a free pass. And I remember talking to Tony about it, and he was like, it was a case of certain episodes I really, really liked, and then certain episodes I was like, oh, it was a bit of a wasted effort. But I think overall, I was just happy to have it back.
Yes.
I'm sure if I went back and watched it without the rose-tinted glasses and the hype, I probably wouldn't be as kind to it. But I am looking forward to delving into season 11, for sure.
Cool. But I mean, tonight we're here to discuss, we're here to take a trip back in time, aren't we, to 1995 to discuss Revelations. Yep. Yeah. So, yeah, December 1995. This was the Christmas episode, actually. The last one aired before Christmas that year. This episode was written by a woman called Kim Newton, directed by David Nutter. And in this episode, Mulder and Scully attempt to protect a boy whose death could trigger the coming of Armageddon from a possibly demonic serial killer who targets people with stigmatas. All right, so marks out of 10 to kick us off with, I guess, Wayne. I mean, what would you give this one out of 10, and why would you give it that grade?
I think I'd give this one a kind of a 6.57, mainly the reason why I would give it that high of a one is it's all balanced on Gillian Anderson's performance in the episode.
Yeah.
And there's a few other things like that as a fanboy of horror movies. I like the fact that Michael Berryman is in this.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
This episode is all about role reversals.
Yes.
I seem to get these episodes. My first ever X-Cast episode was Beyond the Sea, which was one of the best ones of season one. And I seem to get the David Nutter religious episodes because that also was a religious episode. And there was a bit of role reversal in that one as well. And Revelations is a similar, kind of in a similar vein where Mulder is the non-believer and Scully is the believer. And that role reversal is always nice to see. So, yeah, that's why I would give it like a close to a 7 because of Gillian Anderson's performance in the episode, the inclusion of actors like Orlie Emery and Michael Berryman.
Yep.
And then, like, you know, yeah, that was pretty much it.
Yeah, we're not too far off on this one, I don't think. I'm going to give it a 6. And I agree with what you said, basically. I think Anderson's good in this one. I think there's, like, some interesting ideas kind of knocking around in this one, but I don't know if they're really developed, like, extremely well, if you know what I mean.
Totally.
And I think the drama here is a bit, like, underpowered, to be honest. So I guess I kind of think of this one as a bit of a missed opportunity, really. I mean, I don't know if you ever watched, like, Chris Carter's other big show, Millennium, but this feels like the kind of story that they do very well on that series, and I'm not convinced they always do it quite as so well on The X-Files, you know?
I think they fall down because they're running the risk of basically saying that in a show that's mainly well, early on, not so much, partially about aliens and outworldly, that they tried to make, any, if they tried to do anything that's religious in any way and give credence to God being a, something that does exist in this universe tangentially, I think they didn't want to overstep that. I think there was points where they do, obviously they risk it, but the subject matter of Stigmata and the fact that there is clearly a demonic thing going on here. So it does lead to you think, well, obviously if these things exist, God must exist, so on and so forth. And I think that in the X-Files universe, to make such a bold statement would probably, and so early on, even though it's season three, it's still, like, they don't really, like, there's only a few episodes in the entire run of the X-Files where they go religious. And this is one of the few, and this really goes religious to a degree.
It really does. I was going to mention this later, but as, yeah, like the stakes here are like ridiculously high, really, at the end.
Yeah.
I mean, like the end of the world could be coming, but it really doesn't feel like that, you know. It's like the least threatening apocalypse I think I've ever, you know, or apocalyptic type scenario I think I've ever seen, yeah, to be honest, you know.
And I think, like, not to jump ahead, but even the finale kind of leans towards,
yeah,
it's like, oh, there was the Armageddon, but thankfully that happened and, you know, he fell over. And that kind of averted the Armageddon,
yeah,
thing. And it was like, oh, okay. I thought it was building and building and building. It definitely was a storyline that you would be happy. You'd probably be more comfortable with it. But yeah, Millennium or in an episode of Buffy or an episode of Supernatural. That's the kind of storyline that you expect to see there, that the stakes are so high because the show that it's in has a more, not so much ludicrous premise, but it can lend to the ludicrous and still be credible. Whereas X-Files, It even though it's all about the believing in the unbelievable, there's only so far you can push that.
Yeah, but as I said, I think there are some interesting aspects we can get to. I mean, I normally have a look for like some kind of behind the scenes like trivia, and I didn't find a huge amount on this one. I mean, it's significant for a couple of reasons, I think, which is, as I said, Kim Newton, so one of the very few women to write an X-Files episode, and then she'd go on later to write Quagmire later in this season, which I think is a much more successful episode.
Yeah.
That's the Lake Monster episode, yeah. And this is Nutter's last episode, I think, you know, and he was one of the key directors in the early years, you know. Like, yeah, you say, Beyond the Sea and Ice and, you know, some really, really strong episodes in the first few seasons, and then now he's off. I think, luckily for the series, you know, Rob Bowman and Kim Manners are kind of working on the show now. And they're very, very strong directors too. But, I mean, this is by no means Nutter's best episode. It's not a bad episode, I don't think, but kind of a shame he didn't go out with a real bang, you know?
Very, very much so. I mean, I still hold to the fact that Beyond the Sea is probably his best episode, but that's down to the performance of Brad Dourif and Gillian. You know, if you've heard my previous installments on this, like, when I talk about Beyond the Sea, I sing its praise, you know, but... Yeah, now Nutter goes on to do some amazing things as a director. Like, he's responsible for the majority of episode 8 of Game of Thrones.
Mm. I mean, I think there's a couple of scenes here where you sort of see him breathing a bit of life into things. I think he did have that talent of, like, you know, give him a subpar script and he'd make something of it, you know?
Yeah, yeah, definitely, definitely. And he also cites the abilities of Gillian Anderson as an actress within the episode alone. He claims that she definitely made it. Like, he said, overall, he was really happy. Apparently, he was very happy with the actual final episode.
Mm, yeah.
And but puts it solely on her shoulders as being a fantastic actress. And how she portrayed Scully in this episode kind of leads to how the character then expands on her faith going forward.
All right, then. So on the IMDb, I don't know if you've had a look. I mean, what would your guess be as to what this would get out of 10 from the good folk of IMDb?
On IMDb, it can be crapshoot sometimes. I'd say it's probably close to 6.
Actually, a bit better. 7.4, really? Yeah. 7.4 from about 2,300 ratings or so. For season 3, though, I mean, this came equal 20th out of 24 from IMDb. And, I mean, I think that's about right, but... probably because season 3 is so good that there's so much good stuff.
Yeah.
Any other year, this might be closer to the middle of the pack, but I think it's about right in this occasion.
Yeah. I don't know whether it's the religious aspect to it. I think people gravitate towards that. Depending on the audience and what part of the world you're in, I'm sure. But I don't know. I mean, I mean, like I said, I gave it 6.5 to 7, so an extra 0.5 points on it. Yeah. But yeah, it's strange.
I think IMDb does tend to tip towards the generous side of things, doesn't it? Or it either goes one way or the other, I think.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a balancing act, and sometimes you get the trolls who just decide to completely hammer something. But no, maybe, I don't know, who knows when that was rated. Like, I mean, it's an, as I said, it's, you know, December 1990 dot, so.
Yeah. All right, then. So, I mean, with all that being said, let's take a closer look at Revelations. Okay, so quite an interesting, like, teaser sequence, I think, anyway. I mean, it does the job, at least. So, you know, you got this kind of charlatan figure of the preacher.
Yeah.
We later discover Ali Ermi plays him, giving this sermon, and then he's subsequently murdered in his dressing room, isn't he? I mean, what did you make of this sequence as a way to kind of kick things off?
I actually thought, to get, like, I know, maybe at the time, I'm trying to remember back, so Ali Ermi would be obviously well-known to people as the drill sergeant. Full Metal Jacket, or pretty much the same character in Frighteners. He's been in numerous things, but he generally plays, he's an ex-drill sergeant in real life, so he played a drill sergeant in most things that he was in. To see him as a reverend, it was a nice, this whole episode actually, for the guest cameos, it's each actor that cameos in this have a nice change of pace for the character that they play. He comes across as being a very righteous reverend, kind of a fire and brimstone kind of guy, but then you see him in his dressing room and he comes across a bit prim and proper, like he's cleaning off his eyes and with his little saline solution, and he's just sitting there. It's like, it's more like an actor's studio, an actor's dressing room, than a kind of a back of a kind of a church thing, you know?
Yeah, it really like emphasizes the performance aspect of it, doesn't it? You like you say, the fact he's taking off his makeup and stuff. Yeah,
and it kind of shows him as the, it definitely shows him as a shark, even though you don't like. Obviously, people are skeptical. You're watching this, you're kind of going, this looks all a bit staged. Then he gets murdered, and then you find out then from Mulder in his so kind of sardonic way of humor of how he discovers it's a fraud.
Mm. I mean, the other actor's interesting too. Kenneth Welsh, who plays Simon Gates. And I know you mentioned Twin Peaks earlier, and I don't know if you remember him from the second season of Twin Peaks. He plays the figure of Windham Earl, is what I most associate him with.
Yeah, I forgot about that. I rewatched the episode obviously in prep for the thing, and I knew I recognized his face. Like, I know him somewhere. Where is he from? Yeah, Twin Peaks. Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
I don't think his character was consistently like well utilized there, but I mean, he's a good actor. I think he's turned up in tons of stuff.
He has.
And he's pretty good here, I think.
He is. I mean, I think with as, like you said, he's not utilized. He doesn't come across as the bogeyman. They kind of, as much as he should, and we don't really get much of a backstory for him.
No, we get a little bit, don't we, later? But,
yeah.
I mean, in terms of this sequence, I think the very first line the preacher says in the sermon is kind of pivotal. Because he says, God tests our faith so that we may not take it for granted. You know, and I think that's sort of reflective of what Scully goes through in this episode, and he's also talking about, you know, is there such a thing as a miracle, and so on and so forth. I mean, one thing I thought was that, you know, when he's strangled, you know, we get the smoke sort of billowing up from the other guy, but, you know, they sort of try to play up a bit of ambiguity later, even though I think it's hard to play up that ambiguity when you're tipping your hand with the smoke and so on.
Yeah, very much so. They kind of, I don't know whether this was intended, but I was looking at it going, right, well, if Orly Emery's character, the Reverend, is meant to be a fraud and he's got blood packs in his chest for faking his stigmata, maybe this guy is also, while he's a killer, he may also be some sort of fraud in regards to his abilities.
I suppose.
You know, but I think they kind of play it up a bit, and they don't leave it. I think the ambiguity with him is less played over, I guess, but because we don't get to see him as often as we should as the bad guy of the piece, they kind of point at other characters early on to kind of throw you off, saying maybe these are the bad guys instead, or the father, or the character of Owen, who's played by Michael Berryman, because he looks so strange. whereas the main villain would have a more kind of a lovely older next door neighbor type one, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, moving on, we're at the crime scene there, and Mulder and Scully are on the case. And there's this weird thing where, you know, it appears that the preacher's been strangled, but he's lost a lot of blood for some reason. Mulder can't resist, of course, tasting the blood, which is his, his kind of crime scene, you know, thing, is he tastes whatever he can or whatever. And it's fake, obviously. Mulder sort of says he's been tracking this series of murders, you know, fake stigmatics, and there are 12 of them in the world at any one time, Scully says, you know. So that's kind of a setup. I think it's reasonably compelling, you know, it's kind of serviceable anyway, you know.
Yeah, no, very much so. It's like it shows that even though Mulder is a highly skeptical about religious phenomenon, and Scully always tends to buy into them quicker, or even at least gives them a chance to explain themselves quicker, whereas Mulder just wants to denounce them completely as being fake. I think Scully's reaction to him tasting the blood was brilliant. She's looking at him like, what are you doing? Like, you know, even at this stage, he should be used to his weirdness.
Yeah.
But she, even at that point, he's tasting blood, and it's like typical, it's actually corn syrup, like the stuff they used in Carrie type thing, like, you know?
Yeah. It's quite a brisk episode, because then we're at the classroom, we meet Kevin, and, you know, we get this sense, I think he's kind of a naughty kid, he's kind of goofing around anyway. He's called up to the blackboard, isn't he?
Yeah.
And he begins to bleed from his hands there. And I mean, what do you think about this character? And like, I think the actor's okay.
Yeah, the kid actor actually goes on to be in multiple things. He's actually a well-known actor now. He's in shows like Gossip Girl and stuff. But I think he's got that young Amory Katz look about him, like hocus pocusy type 90s teen. Even though he's only meant to be about 12 or so, I think. The fact that they show him as being a bit of a rebel at the start, where he's doing spitballs at the girls, and then he turns out that he's got a holy kind of link, makes him a bit new. But he's a kid, you know, he's a kid actor in the shows. I mean, I didn't really take him. He's a bit whiny at parts when he starts saying, "I didn't do anything," or when the thermometer later on, the thermometer explodes, and you're kind of going, he's like, "I didn't do anything." I found the reasoning for Mulder and Scully just turning up to be a bit thrown together. Like, the FBI put out an APB for people that are the killer that's after people with stigmata. So automatically a child counselor would be the one to pick that one up. Yeah, I found that to be, she was like, I saw your bulletin about the serial killer killing people with stigmata. We happen to have a kid who bleeds from his hands here. You know, found that on my school counselor's bulletin board type thing. Like, do they listen to the FBI scanners or something now? Schools or something. Like, there was no real explanation for that. It's just that they were there, you know.
Yeah, it's quite, you know, it's quite rote, I guess. And I mean, we get a bit of backstory when they do turn up, don't they? Because we find out that Kevin's dad was kind of institutionalized. He had said something about Kevin being chosen by God, you know. But I mean, I know you raised, you know, the issue of Gillian Anderson's performance, and I really like this little scene where she sits down and talks to Kevin. I thought she played that very, very nicely.
Yeah, that's a lovely scene, actually, because she's like, she got, even the school nurse seemed a bit brisk with the kid, because Scully asks, like, did you take his temperature? And the way she says, no, I didn't, you know, she hadn't bothered to even take the kid's temperature. She was just really there just to clean him up. Scully just came across as being the carer, even more so than anyone else that was there. Like, the teacher was there to lambast him about his play acting. The nurse just seemed to be there to clean up after him. The school counselor was skeptical because the kid's parents were a mess and the marriage had fallen apart. And Mulder just didn't give a damn because it was just all about this religious hokery pokery that he didn't really care about. And his whole course thing was to denounce it completely. Scully, again, was the only caring figure in that whole scene. And she spoke very softly to the kid.
Yeah, no, it came across as very genuine, didn't it? Very sincere, I thought, anyway, you know. And, I mean, I suppose we get quite a lot going on here. Kevin's mum turns up, like you say, the thing with the thermometer where that bursts, and it's kind of set up, isn't it, that Kevin's going to be placed in this shelter while his case is investigated, you know, and I think the agents kind of decide eventually to go and see his dad. So I mean, yeah, they go and see him, and this is kind of what we were saying, you know. He's talking about, like, the forces of darkness are watching him, and he's warning about, you know, a powerful and respected man and Armageddon and all this, but I just don't really feel it. Do you know what I mean? I can't really put my finger on why, but...
I put it down to the portrayal of the dad, because the way we're told about this violent man who they thought was hurting his son, and he was wielding guns at people saying he's here to protect his child for God and all this stuff. And then we go to this mental institution, we see this soft-spoken guy who's like, I'm just a messenger, and you're going to go full circle and find and protect my son, and, you know, people that see God's way. And it's just like, okay, this dude clearly is, there's something wrong with him, but he doesn't come across as being a violent guy. So you're kind of like going, how could they ever like link the idea that this guy was out to hurt his child, when clearly he just seems like to be this soft-spoken, wispy, kind of prophet-y type character, that he says himself, I'm just a messenger, you know? And again, Mulder is just like, right, my 5 minutes with this dude is done. I'm gone. And he's directing all of his speech at Scully, like purely. And it's like every religious person in this episode, anyone that has any kind of religious connotation or like it believes in any way, they just direct everything at Scully. They already know that she's the chosen one to protect the kid. They all seem to know this, even though they're all trying to protect this child. So yeah, I felt it was just a case of Scully was going from point A to point B to point C. So she just eventually come around to the fact that, look, I'm just going to save this kid from whoever's trying to kill him.
Yeah, eventually she does. I mean, that comes a little bit later, doesn't it? And I mean, the next sequence I thought might have been the best of the episode, which is when we're at the shelter. And, you know, you get Kevin telling this kind of scary story to the other kids, and it's kind of intercut with the figure we come to know is Owen, Owen Jarvis, kind of coming after him. And, yeah, I mean, this is what I meant when I said there's a few points where Nutter kind of does a good job and whips up a bit of atmosphere. You know, this was pretty good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, and like the looming figure of the actor Michael Berryman, like he's well known from the Wes Craven movie The Hills Have Eyes.
Yeah.
He's the famous bald face on the cover of that. And he is a strange looking dude, but he's very soft spoken in real life. I've seen him being interviewed. I'm a huge horror nut, like, so I've seen him being interviewed at multiple conventions, and I think I was at a screening of a film. He was either gave a talk by video or just introing a movie. And he's a very soft spoken man, massive giant man, but very soft spoken. To see him, like, you always see him in this kind of menacing character, and then Owen comes in and just takes Kevin away. And it is, you think, oh, the kid screwed this fella, because he's just told a story of somebody who matches this character's appearance coming to kill children. And he freaks out all the other kids in the home. Yeah, I thought Nutter did a good job of building up kind of like a little bit of kind of spooky kind of TV mid-90s horror there.
He did. And, yeah, I think the reversal then is quite effective when we find out that he's much more of a kindly figure, isn't he, Owen, than we sort of would presuppose, I guess.
Even the sketch,
yeah,
that the kids get the artist to draw is like this weirdly caricatured version of Berryman's face, that he has like his mouth open with his gapy teeth, and he's like doing this crazy eye thing, which he actually didn't do when he walked into the room with the kids. See, because it cuts from that scene to the artist drawing his face, and you're kind of like, okay, that's a bit exaggerated. But yeah, as you say, when it cuts to him with the kid, you find out that he's a real soft-spoken carer, and he carves little wooden animals to make an ark. You know, he's a religious man. And actually, so a side note to this as well, Berryman is well known for saying that this is actually his favourite role he ever portrayed.
Yeah, that's quite striking, really. But, you know, I mean, I don't know how many roles he's had, but for this to be his favourite.
Well, he's had quite a few. Like, he's well known in horror circles, but he's always cast as that, like, crazy serial killer type character. And this is completely, he's cast out of type here, and that's why he liked it so much. And again, it's an episode about role reversals, for sure, for anyone that's involved in it, in the storylines. And as an actor, this is something that's a role reverse for him, for sure, because he gets to be this protective character that at first glance you think, well, this guy's a nut job, but when you get to know him, he's there to protect the child, and that's his sole purpose in life, is to protect Kevin. You get to see that happen.
Yeah, we do, because when we see him with Kevin, he sort of says to him, you know, think of me as your guardian angel. And that's just before Mulder and Scully turn up. Kevin kind of flees. Yeah, they interview Owen, don't they? He's kind of like, you know, God asked me to protect the boy or something like that.
Yeah.
And like you say, he picks up very quickly that Scully's slightly more sympathetic to what he's saying than Mulder is, you know.
Yeah, because him and Mulder trade barbs. They trade scripture barbs. Your man's like, you know, let him... who has ears listen, and then Mulder's like, let him who has a mouth speak, and they'll tell me where the kid is, type thing. Yeah, it's you see, like, he knows he's not going to get anywhere with Mulder, so he just he turns to Scully and pretty much repeats exactly what the father had said, and, you know, he says, look, you're the one to save the boy, type thing. And yeah,
I mean, there's a couple of interesting things here, I thought, anyway. It's like, you know, he mentioned something about, like, this kind of watered down version of belief when he says, like, you know, oh, whatever, about mass on Christmas and fish on Friday, you know, the idea that just paying lip service to religion. And that reminded me of another episode, which I don't know if you remember the episode De Hand Die Verletzt in season 2.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, they sort of play around with those ideas in a kind of a different context there. But I thought that was fascinating.
Actually, De Hand Die Verletzt was my last episode that I was on for.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
There you go. So yeah, I remember that was the last episode I reviewed on for the Eggcast. Yeah, but no, that's another one that, like I said, I get all the religion ones.
Yeah, I mean, what I was going to say, Mulder's attitude to religion is interesting. I kind of like the fact that they sort of lean into it. You know, that he, if he doesn't agree with something, he really lets people know, doesn't he?
Totally.
And it's not just religion. It's like in season 5 when he goes through his kind of crisis of faith, where he stops believing in aliens and stuff. And he becomes very obnoxious to people who do. I think Duchovny's quite good at playing that, even though he can be kind of infuriating to watch Mulder when he's like that.
Oh, very much so. Duchovny is, like, he loves turning things on its head. I mean, Duchovny loved this about this episode, where he got to be that kind of a character. And it's one of the few early on versions of Mulder that we get to see him be a skeptic. And as you said, more so in season 5 when he loses his faith overall with everything. Yeah. You get to see it more and more. But yeah, when he looked, like, I've heard him say it many a time at conventions and like even in interviews, that he loved the chance to be able to turn Mulder to that way and let Scully be the believer for a short period of time. It was a relief for him as an actor portraying that character for such a long time.
Mm. Okay, so then I guess Kevin returns home, doesn't he? And then Gates comes looking for him. You know, again, we see the burnt doorknob, so we know he's kind of otherworldly, don't we?
Yeah, you see him melt the doorknobs. You're kind of going, right, well, okay, this dude clearly has a force. You know, he's not doing that Kevin McAllister Home Alone thing where he's putting that thing on the doorknob to, you know, so he's not doing that malarkey. But, yeah, it was, and I did actually, when I was watching the episode, I did get a kind of a wee Home Alone flashback of poor Kevin stuck in his house with these dudes trying to get in. But, yeah, he ends up hiding in a wash basket.
Yeah, he does. And I thought that was an effective little sequence, too. I thought that was pretty well done.
Yeah, the white wash basket with the blood, the stigmata blood seeping out of it, which was a nice touch.
And I think this is where Owen dies, isn't it? Because he turns up, there's a fight, Kevin gets away, just and kind of he runs into Mulder and Scully's kind of path, doesn't he?
Yeah. I mean, Owen sacrifices himself, basically. He fulfills his destiny as his guardian. Yeah.
So he's out of the picture now, and, you know, Kevin says to Scully, I think, are you the one that was sent to protect me? So this is potentially, you know, an interesting development, isn't it? This is where it becomes a bit more personal for Scully.
Yeah, and Kevin seems to be more and more believing in his own idea of what he's meant to be as this goes on. So he's, like, at the start, he was like, I'm just a kid, I'm not really here to do anything, I don't know what's going on. And as he progresses, the more people he meets, like, after he talks to Owen, and Owen explains things to him, he starts to believe in himself more. And at the bit where he turns to Scully and says, oh, you're here to protect, you're the one who's been sent to protect me, I think that's him starting to really understand that there's something about him that needs protecting in the first place, whereas probably beforehand he just didn't really get it.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Yeah, I think for me, I think the actor doesn't quite kind of embody it as much as I would like. I think there's some really good child actors on The X-Files. I mean, the kid who plays Gibson Praise in season 5 is really good.
Yes.
I don't want to be too harsh on a child actor, but, you know, it's not the performance with the most depth I've ever seen.
No.
He's kind of fine, though. He's fine. I've seen worse. I've seen worse, too.
He earned his milk and cookies for the day, I suppose.
Yeah, he did. He did. So what happens next? I think there's an autopsy, isn't there? Owen's body is not decomposing as it should, and it smells faintly of flowers, at least according to Scully.
Yeah, I actually really like this scene. I think it kind of gives credence to Owen as well. It gives him kind of he's like, you know, if you do believe, he's gone to heaven, he's gotten his wish.
And there's some decent back and forth too, isn't there, I think, between Mulder and Scully. You know, like, she says, yes, I believe in the idea that God's hand can be witnessed. And, I mean, I do think it's a nice little wrinkle to Scully's character, you know, that you've got somebody who is so, you know, rooted in science.
Mm.
And I think it is an interesting tension when you add religious belief into the mix too. But it's also kind of understandable why Mulder gets a bit kind of dogmatic in response, I think, you know, when she's got such a high standard of proof for things normally, you know?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I think I do like as well, she lits on Mulder, like, because she gives out, she basically said, look, you're willing to believe all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
Whatever, you know, you're out there trying to prove the existence of aliens or whatever. And the first thing that comes along that may be an actual, honest to God, miracle, and you're ready to shoot it down without a single notice. And she goes, can you not just give it, you know, give it a chance to prove itself to you? And he just blatantly just was like, nope, you know? I think that, again, it's the whole role reversal thing. But I think, yeah, it does, you're right. It adds an interesting dimension to Scully as a character, because usually it's her going, look, this is ridiculous. You're talking, like, you know, if they're talking about werewolves or creatures from the Black Lagoon or, you know, vampires or anything like that, it's ridiculous and it's humorous for her and it's comical. But when it comes to her fate and something that she's grown up with, and that's the thing about her, her fate is part of her childhood. It's linked with her father. She's had a tenuous relationship up until his death and all that stuff. And it kind of grounds her in that regard. The same way, like, that's her battle scar. The same way Mulder's sister is his battle scar. So for they question each other's kind of issues to a degree. And even though they're meant to support each other, they don't always do that to the best of their abilities.
And I like that, you know, like I keep saying, she's religious, but, you know, we do get the sense that she's kind of drifted away from the church, don't we?
Oh, yeah, totally.
That felt believable to me too. I mean, I wonder if this episode plays differently to people who are very religious or not. I mean, I don't know about yourself, but I'm not particularly religious.
I'm not. But I do have people in my life that are. Ireland is a very tenuous country in regards to religion anyway. But I'm not a believer in any way, shape or form. I'm a pretty staunch atheist. But I'm willing to let people have their beliefs. And I've watched things like this with people that do believe. And they find it refreshing that there are characters in modern society on TV that are struggling with their faith because, you know, it's in this day and age, it's more laughed at than anything else if you do have any kind of a faith in a religion. And I think the show Scully to being an intelligent woman, a doctor, but still having that faith in her, I think that's it makes her a three-dimensional character. It makes her more real than a lot of characters. Like, there's always people shouting about, you know, female representation in shows or movies or something like that. And Scully is definitely one of the most well-represented characters in modern kind of fiction. And I think her religious beliefs, as well as her other beliefs and abilities, make her that character, particularly in stories like this. And again, as I said at the start of the episode, it's one of the reasons why I give it a 7, close to a 7, is because of Gillian Anderson's portrayal and how they portray Scully as that kind of well-rounded character, with her flaws and with her abilities as well.
Yeah, totally. And I think, like, it feels authentic, like, later in the series, at certain points, you know, you get a sense that in her family, you know, the mother's particularly religious. And I don't know, it just feels well done, feels sincere. Yeah, we find out a little bit more, I think, about Gates. You know, this is just the next scene, which is that he's a CEO, he's a respected, powerful and respected man, as was already alluded to. And Mulder kind of suggests that something called Jerusalem Syndrome might be at play, which I thought was interesting. I mean, we know it's not the case, I think, but, you know, that he could have become deluded after a visit to the Holy Land. And that almost could be an interesting concept for an episode if there was more ambiguity, you know.
Very much so, yeah.
Yeah, but that's not really the way they chose to play it, but still, it was interesting, I thought.
I don't think there was... The thing about... another thing, I know this because I've seen where the show goes, but I'm wondering at the time if people thought it was going to lead somewhere.
Do you mean in, like, future episodes kind of thing?
Yeah, if it was going to be revisited. Because, I mean, yeah, like you said, the Jerusalem Syndrome is an interesting idea, and it was never explored again. We never see that crop up anywhere. And this whole idea is never really explored again fully. And yeah, look, it's a shame because it could have gone to an interesting place.
All right, so then we're at the roadside, aren't we? Because Kevin's mum's car's broken down. Gates turns up. Kevin kind of bolts, or does he? Because it seems to be a projection, doesn't it?
It is, yeah.
I don't know. There's lots going on here, because Gates gets run over, Kevin's mum crashes the car and dies, and I don't know. It just didn't really feel that dramatic to me. I don't know why.
Is it explained in the episode? Did I miss it that Gates seems to have some kind of homing beacon attached to the kid?
I don't really know.
He just seems to know where he is. He just knows that he needs to go find. Because, I mean, what happens is Mulder and Scully are told that Kevin is brought to lunch by a counselor, but then they're also told that another kid matching his description was seen getting into his car with his mother and driving away at the same time. They're given this report. Yeah, but how does Gates find out about it? How does Gates know where they're gone? You know, how does he chase them down? And then there's that little creepy scene with the, where he's helping the mother take the radio cap off the car, and she kind of freaks out a bit, and he slams her to the ground. It looks extremely violent. Whatever way they did that, whatever stunt woman did that, or whatever the actress did it, it actually looked like she smacked her face off the ground.
Yeah.
It was like, ooh, it actually made me go, oh, that's not healthy. Yeah, and Kevin then projects himself and distracts Gates and tries to go wake his mother up. It's a bit of a, I want to say it's not a Benny Hill scene, but it's kind of got a plastic feel to it when Gates gets run over by the car. I don't know what it is.
Well, there was a moment I thought was unintentionally funny, but it was slightly later, which is when we see Gates watching from the bushes, you know, after Mulder and Scully have turned up. I don't know why. That kind of struck me as funny. And, I mean, Scully seems even more kind of interested now, even more personally invested. I mean, I think the interesting thing is that she denies that to Mulder. She says, you know, I'm not getting personally involved. But it very much appears to me that she is, you know.
Yeah. It was like she was slightly ashamed of it, but not really. Like, she was going to help no matter what, but she was still trying to get Mulder to agree with her in some way.
Yeah, because I think she's realised that Mulder, you know, he listens to her most of the time, but in this instance, this is not the kind of the investigation that he's going to be the most, you know, supportive on, isn't it? So
yeah,
I think that's kind of what's going on. And she kind of agrees with Kevin's suggestion that, you know, please don't take me back to the shelter or whatever it is he says. So he's back in the motel with both of them, isn't he?
Yeah.
And, I mean, they get back into it again, don't they? Where Scully says to Mulder, why won't you accept a miracle? And Mulder's saying, you know, my patience has been tested, but not my faith.
Yeah.
And it's all very interesting. It's quite good. It's just not really going anywhere much, in my view. I don't really know why.
We get a taste of the Mulder humor a bit when he says, you never drew my bath like that. You never drew your bath. But I mean, yeah, it's a kind of like the whole scene seems to be set up so she can just see more of the kid's scars and wounds. She gets to see the big giant gash in his side, and then she gets to tell Mulder that was there. It wasn't there at the crash scene. It's crash scene. He only just got it now, blah, blah, blah. And then the kid in his ability as an escape artist does a legger again.
Yeah, I did like the shot of the bars that are kind of bent.
Yes.
And, yeah, like you say, he's gone. And Scully suggests going back to Kevin's father. And they do, and he's not much help because he's on tranquilizers. And, I mean, I know he critiqued his actor's performance in the first scene.
Yeah.
I didn't think he was any good in this scene either.
No, I actually think the actor was on tranquilizers. And they just had to write it into the script. Because he's just so placid. Yeah. So placid. And you're kind of going, this dude is in an institution for being violent. And he's the most chilled, violent dude ever.
I didn't look up the chap's name. I didn't recognise him from anything else. I don't know if you did.
No. Sam Bottoms is the actor, apparently. He actually passed away in 2008.
That's the funny thing about these episodes now. I mean, they're so old that you go back and look at the cast list and there are people who have passed away and you just think, whoa.
Yeah.
Because it's like the actor who plays Kevin in this episode is like 2 years older than I am.
That's and, crazy.
I mean, you think about all those kids in the children's home, you know, and some of them have probably been married 3 times or something now. You know what I mean? They're all properly grown up. It's kind of weird to think about. I mean, this moment where Scully sees the recycling symbol on the bin and she sort of realizes that Kevin could be at the recycling plant. I mean, this...
Dear God.
Yeah, I mean, this is reminiscent of Beyond the Sea, because there's something in Beyond the Sea, isn't it, where she kind of picks up on something like that. But it really works in Beyond the Sea, and I don't think it...
It does. It doesn't work here, because it's just all of a sudden she's walking along and she sees a recycling symbol. You're going to go, really? The two moments in this episode that kind of make me go, I hear... is the bit where they turn up at the school where the counselor tells them, I heard your bulletin. And then the bit where it's like, the recycling symbol. He owns a recycling plant. Yeah. Full circle. Yeah. That links. And you're kind of going, no, it doesn't. It doesn't really. No, I mean, I think they were trying too hard to be cryptic and smart, and it just came across as being very weakly tied together and dumb.
You can see what they're going for, but it needed to be punched up, I think, or something.
Yeah, very much so. Maybe if the guy's recycling plant was called Full Circle Recycling, maybe yeah. That would have been better. But I don't know. I just found it to be very, very forced. I actually found it seemed like she was grasping at straws. I actually, at that point, I was with Mulder. I was like, oh, come on, he's at the airport. Look, he's gone to the airport. Stop it with your bins, you know?
Yeah, well, I don't know if you remember, like, a few episodes previous to this, in Clyde Bruckman's Final Repose, there's a funny scene there where they talk about the fat little white Nazi stormtrooper that appears to be a propane tank or something. Yeah. And it's played up for laughs there, and then here it's, you know, we're going to take the same kind of leap kind of seriously again. So I don't know. Okay, so that's that. But what about the fact that the recycling plant is in Jerusalem, Ohio?
Yeah, like the naming schemes. Like, I mean, I know in the States there's a lot of places that are named in that way, and probably to an American audience is not that much of a stretch. But it's a bit on the nose. It really is. It's a bit on the nose.
And I think this scene, I've written down that, you know, Kevin's performance seems very one note here.
Yeah.
You know, and I can't remember exactly what it was that prompted me to write that.
I'm wondering, it leads me to think, like, was it filmed at a sequence? Did he get better at certain other sequences because it was filmed later and they had a little bit of word with him or something? But I found this whole scene to be very, it's the finale scene where Scully up, like, I found it to be very cheap overall. Like, it was tacked on. It actually reminded me of the really bad ending of Child's Play 2, where Chucky gets blown up in the toy factory. But it's a similar setup. It's a machine, but I think it was a comedy of errors on Gates's part, on how he ends up getting put away.
Yeah. What it reminds me of is the X-Files episode Millennium, where it's supposed to be an apocalyptic scenario, but it's basically four zombies in a basement. And here, again, it's like, you know, well, it's like there's so much on the line here if Kevin does die, but never at any point did I really feel that, you know.
Yeah.
It's unusual for them to go so big with the stakes, you know. Often there's not that much on the line, really. And you can sort of see why when you see them do something like this.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason, yeah, like you're right, like to see them go like, oh, it's Armageddon. You're kind of going, hang on a second, what? Where usually it's like it's a small town in America that's been, you know, it's been terrorized by some weird thing that is dangerous on a local level, and that's what makes it so unbelievable, because the thing can get away because it's so contained in a small story. Whereas this, it's like, it's Armageddon. The whole world is fucked. Pardon my French. But it's like, yeah, I just find it a bit of a stretch for sure, only that he's taken out by a shredding machine.
There's a bit of a kerfuffle, isn't there? He falls to his death, and Kevin's all right. So, yeah, it didn't really get my pulse racing, I'm afraid, which is a shame.
Now, his death scene was impressive enough because you do see him go into the grinder.
True.
And it was gory to a degree. Now, the blood looks pretty fake, but you see you see the top part of his body-ish go down into the grinder, and his arm is left flailing. And for late 90s, kind of just after or just before the Watershed TV, that was impressive.
That's a good point, yeah. There's still actually quite a bit to go, isn't there? Because we've got a couple of scenes. You know, Scully saying goodbye to Kevin, and there's this whole exchange that I think is supposed to be kind of mysterious and enigmatic, but it doesn't really play that way to me, where, you know, it's like, maybe I'll see you again sometime. And Kevin gives this kind of knowing smile, and he's like, you will.
And, yeah.
Just kind of dangling the, you know, the possibility there could be a sequel, I guess. Or is he kind of talking, like, metaphorically or something? How did you sort of take it?
I took it that they might actually revisit the idea if it was well received. Or maybe they'd bridge it with, like, you know, like, maybe it would, Millennium would have been a good show to have that and actually kill off Kevin and see what the consequences are. I don't know. I mean, I, unless they were looking to revisit Scully's, you know, religious aspect again, and make it an even grander scale, have it that Kevin was a bit older and there was a bit more at stake or something, or he's better to more able to look after himself. But yeah, I don't know. I think, yeah, they kind of wanted to leave it open and leave it kind of teasing you with more, I guess.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt. I mean, they do return to this idea of Scully kind of protecting or looking after kind of vulnerable children in other ways. But sadly, we never see Kevin again, I'm afraid. Yeah, so then she goes to the church, doesn't she? So this is quite, you know, it's probably 2 or 3 minutes long, this scene at the end in the confessional.
I think this is the scene of the episode. It's all about Scully. It's all about her faith, about her rediscovering her faith. Like she says in it, like, it's been 6 years since her last confession. I was expecting a kind of a twist. I was expecting for the priest to end up being Gates. Even when I first watched it all those many moons ago, I thought, they're going to cut and Scully's going to leave and Gates is going to step out of the confessional or something. That would have been a nice ending, but that didn't happen. But yeah, I think it probably would have undercut Scully's big spiel about herself and her partner and how she's able to talk to him about nearly everything, but not this. And it kind of shows you a little bit of a divide between Mulder and Scully and how she's struggling with the fact that it's not so much, is it all right for her to believe in God in this modern age? Because she says, maybe God is talking, but nobody's listening. And is that a kind of a commentary on our more cynical age that we're in? And, you know, it's harder for people with faith to kind of day to day say that they are people of faith because they'd get ridiculed for it. Even back in the 90s, you know, more. I thought that scene, though, was very well acted by Gillian Anderson. I think it does lead to what Scully, as Scully's faith evolves throughout the show after that. Even though Beyond the Sea would have been the kind of the first religious episode for Scully in regards to her beliefs and what that kind of went around, this is the one that kind of has ramifications going forward.
And I mean, just to finish this section of the podcast, I mean, I guess I'm feeling pretty solid on my 6, and not a bad episode by any means, I don't think. Not the most entertaining episode, sadly. And I sort of feel if they could have played it up a bit more, you know, kind of emphasized some of the, you know, like the lurid aspects of it or the gory aspects of it.
Mm.
It just feels to me like this was one they never really had the time to kind of polish into what it needed to be, perhaps. And I think that's probably understandable. You know, this was, you know, they're knocking out 24 episodes a year at this stage. Some of them are going to be kind of a bit flat or a bit underdeveloped, I guess, aren't they?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, it's the nature of serialized television. You're not going to hit a home run every single episode. Like if it wasn't, as you said, if it wasn't 20 plus episodes a season, I'm sure they could have focused on it more, maybe made it more of a kind of an entertaining episode, or even delved a bit deeper into the lore or the idea of what the episode was about. But I think they went too big, not too soon, because it is season 3, but they went too big with it in regards to the stakes, and there was no real payoff, and it was ended too easily. There wasn't really a danger there. Like, there was no big kind of face-off with the bad guy. The face-off with the bad guy was with a Shredder. It wasn't Gully or Mulder, or God didn't intervene, or there wasn't a miracle at the end. It was just the guy fell over.
I'll tell you what we'll do.
Okay.
We'll dive into our listener mailbag, and then after that we'll do the X quiz. Sound all right?
Awesome.
All right, then. So the mailbag, just people who responded to my call for feedback on Facebook. So just got a few here. And quick one, the first one from Chris Knowles, who said, Arlie Ermey, good casting with a villain, otherwise tedium. And then Dina Ferreri said, I find the religious episodes a little difficult to watch because there are some parts where Scully has blind belief that's frustrating. But then there are others when she's struggling between the beliefs that were instilled in her as a child and her science-trained adult self, and it gets more interesting. The part I enjoy most about this one is the connection between Scully and Kevin, which is sweet and feels genuine.
Very much so, you know, that is one of the key things. If they had it, even with the actor playing Kevin being as wooden as he is, if they hadn't had that connection, I don't think that the episode would have landed at all.
Mm. And the next message is from Michael Little, and he mentions the actor. He says, the actor who plays Kevin wasn't very good at the time. There is nothing going on underneath the surface. He is still acting and is much better now. So, I mean, that's good to hear. I mean, I did look at his IMDb page, and I've seen a few things he was in, but I couldn't place him, if that makes sense.
Oh, no, totally. I wouldn't be able to pick him out of a lineup. He looks like a cheap Zac Efron.
But it's good to hear that he's, you know, he's improved anyway, according to Michael. All right, this next comment is from Marlene Stemmy, and I like this comment. It's a little bit long. I've just shortened it slightly, but I thought it was worth including. So she says, I like the seriousness with which the episode presented Scully's religion and that Scully's belief in combination with her scientific work helped solve the case. I like the tension inherent in strong belief that is neither fundamentalism nor mild-mannered humanism. So that's kind of like what we said, I think.
But said much better than either of us said.
Oh, without doubt. Yeah, definitely. And, she says, I think this is the first time Mulder is shown as both a stumbling block and an encouragement to Scully's religious faith. Although the minister in the teaser tells a story showing only the stumbling block aspect because the minister doesn't believe in questioning. At the end, Scully asks the priest if he believes in miracles and decries his cop-out answer. In Redux 2, she asks a doctor if he believes in miracles. She asks about miracles to authority figures in both of her worlds, religious and medical, which I find interesting.
Ooh.
Revelations also is the beginning of the overt theme of some things being meant for Scully and not Mulder. I think the story with Kevin and his parents is rather weak, but the character threads for Scully and for Mulder and the religious ideas rise above the basic plot, in my opinion. Kevin telling Scully that she'll see him again makes me wonder in what faces, if any, she may have seen him later in the series. Emily, Gibson Praise, Father Joe. Because it's so Scully character focused, the episode has a lot of ideas to take forward, even though the immediate story could have been better could have been better executed. And I very much agree that yes, it's the execution, isn't it? I think that seems to be the kind of common theme in a lot of these messages.
I also really like that point of saying she may not have seen Kevin, but she saw him in faces that she saw in future episodes. Like, I think that's really good. That's a really good way of putting it, because like it's the effect of Kevin going forward for Scully rather than actual Kevin himself. We took it figuratively rather than the idea of his spirituality following Scully as she went along. So, yeah, I really like that. That's a great idea.
Yeah, really is. And final message for today then was from Clara Jean Cook, who said, please can you mention the small scene of all the little boys in the children's home? I feel like their acting is really good and it is their tiny moment to shine. Yeah, they were all right, weren't they?
I think that was one of the most interesting things about the episode, because it was a bit different to everything else that was going on. It showed Kevin was accepted in his home, in the kids' home, because he was kind of right in the center and he was telling this creepy story and all these kids were like latching on to every word he was saying. So he wasn't treated as an outsider there. He wasn't treated like the freak with stigmata. He looked like he was leading these kids in a bit of a ghost story. So, yeah.
All right then, Wayne. So are you ready to face the X quiz?
Sure.
And I can't remember, you were saying you had kind of a mixed history with these quizzes in the past.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly how well or badly I did, but I'll give it a whirl. I'm always up for a quiz.
Well, you've alluded to one of the answers already, so I'm certain you're going to get at least 1 out of 5. So let's see. Question 1. According to Scully, during the autopsy scene, how old is Owen Jarvis?
He is in his 40s.
He is. Okay, I'll give you half a mark for that. If you can guess the exact year, I'll give you the full mark.
46.
No, it's 42.
42. I was going, Douglas Adams, let me down.
Yeah. Oh, well, half a mark for getting the 40s. Okay. All right. Question 2. 14 hours after his death, what is Owen's core body temperature?
It's room temperature, isn't it?
We get a specific figure
here. I don't know the specific.
98 degrees is his room, is his core temperature. 98 degrees. All right. So question 3 is, name one of the two saints that Scully refers to as incorruptibles.
Oh, I'm not going to get this. Two saints as incorruptibles.
No idea? No?
No, can't remember.
There's one male, one female. One of them shares the name with a Simon and Garfunkel song, if that helps.
Cecilia?
There we go. That was kind of helped along. Half a mark,
that
I guess.
Very much helped along.
Yeah, Cecilia was one and Francis was the other. I think it's just the two we get Scully mentioning. All right, question 4. So why was Simon Gates arrested a few years prior to the events of this episode? So this is kind of mentioned in dialogue very quickly, I think.
It was to do with Jerusalem, wasn't it?
Well, this is the reason he goes to Jerusalem, I think.
Oh.
He does something, then he goes off kind of on his pilgrimage or whatever. I'll give you it. So it's a DUI, and they said that the incident left the young boy paralyzed. So I guess the implication is he was kind of torn up about that.
I completely blanked on that. I've completely forgotten that it was in the episode at all. I just remember they talk about him going to Jerusalem.
Yeah, no, it's right before that. They say it really quick. It just goes by. Yeah. One out of four so far, but question five I think you'll get. So it's a quote, and I just need to know who said it and kind of roughly the context. So
okay.
The quote is, "You never draw my bath."
Okay, that's Mulder, and he says it's her in the bathroom. Sorry, in the bedroom yep. of the hotel after she draws Kevin's bath.
That's correct. Absolutely. So two out of five. So respectable-ish.
Yeah, I've done better before. I think I've gotten at least three. I'll have to go back and listen to the other episodes to confirm my own scores.
Yeah.
They were good questions, and I completely blanked on that whole why you went to Jerusalem thing.
I guess we'll wrap up there. But, I mean, Wayne, just tell us, I know you have various kind of projects on the go, but, I mean, anything you want to plug? Or?
Well, the podcast that I'm a part of is the Irish Pubcast. I've mentioned this before on the show, since I think I mentioned it on the last one, I'm also a comic book writer, artist, and colorist. I'm a member of a team called Rogue Comics, Rogue Comics Ireland. Our website is roguecomicsireland.com. And my book is The Broker. It's kind of a conspiracy revenge story. And that's available to purchase through roguecomicsireland.com. You'll also find our podcast up there as well. The Irish Podcast is also hosted on Rogue Comics Ireland. And you'll see all of the other books that we have there available to look over, a lot of artwork, and my other co-creators of Rogue Comics Ireland, and also my fellow podcaster, Karen Marcantonio, artist and art director, Kev Keane, and editor at Rogue Comics, Gillian Dempsey. We're all a part of that team. Also, Darren Fahey does the podcast with us as well. So we're all a big kind of a creative team together that produce Rogue Comics and Pubcast and numerous other projects. So yeah, that's pretty much where you'll find us.
Cool. So how about yourself on like social media and whatnot? Are you pretty active there or not?
You'll find me on Twitter, so it's just Wayne Talbot at Wayne Talbot on Twitter, and on Instagram it's Wayne Talbot 37. That's pretty much my social media outlet.
Cool. Well, if you ever do get around to watching season 11, feel free to let us know how you find it.
I will indeed. No, it's on the list. I'll probably get around to once my daughter goes to college or something. Yeah, no, it's not for sure.
Yeah, the struggle is real, I understand. as for us, I mean, you can find us in all the usual places. I'm sure everyone listening knows, but it's Twitter at the X_cast, or go to Facebook, search for X-Files Basement, which is our fan group. If you have a spare minute or two, you could go to iTunes and rate and review us if you want to, but it would help us out. And thanks to Wayne, but until next time, always remember, trust no one.
The X-Cast and X-Files podcast is produced and presented by Tony Black, alongside a dedicated group of podcasters and X-Files fans. You can find us on Twitter at The X-Cast, and on Facebook if you type in The X-Cast, or at our group X-Files Basement, an X-Cast podcast fan group, where you can continue the discussion about all things Mulder and Scully. If you want to support The X-Cast further, you can now subscribe and become a patron of the show on Patreon. On Google, just type patreon.com/TheXcast. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. You'll see all of our tiers, subscription options and perks, which include early access to episodes, bonus content such as commentaries on X-Files episodes, access to a patron chat zone, and even appearing on one of our patron roundtable discussions. We would appreciate any support you can give the show, so just go to patreon.com/TheXcast to find out more. Our title music is provided courtesy of Will A, who you can find on Twitter at IAmWillAye.